This is Charles Minor, reporting for Mutual in Chungking. Chinese forces have captured Tangchung, if anyone cares. Frankly, the Chinese people don't. They'd rather talk about the atomic bomb. The first atomic bomb did more than blow Hiroshima off the map. It knocked China's ideas about the war sky high. It couldn't have transformed Chungking merely if it had been dropped here and had obliterated the city. Whatever it is, it must be done, is the Chinese appraisal of the bomb. And you get the same comment from Cooley that you get from the cabinet minister. A government spokesman told me the atomic bomb is certain to end the war much quicker than was formerly believed possible. He said that after admitting he knows nothing of its nature. However, he does know what an atomic bomb can be expected to do. This confidence is shared by coolies who don't even know what an atom is. Military officials here in Chungking are shying away from comment. The man in the street has no such reserve. He is talking of a Japanese surrender tomorrow, or maybe next week. Certainly not later than next month. Always ones to think of peace. The Chinese were especially concerned with post-war use of the atom-spitting formula. On paper, there are plans for the biggest dam in the world in the Yangtze Gorge near Chungking. It could become the greatest hydroelectric plant in the world, almost as powerful as a gob of atomic force the size of a golf ball. China would rather have the atomic golf ball. China is talking about skipping the steam era, the gasoline era, the electric era, and the airplane era. In the blueprint stage, there are expensive plans to bring these developments to China. Maybe, so thinking Chinese, maybe we can tear up those blueprints. Why not borrow money for uranium instead of borrowing money for Western industrial equipment? Why not step forward 4,000 years instead of just 40? But there is still a war on. The Chinese recognize that. They think the atomic bomb can work if America and England aren't too squeamish. Why hasn't Tokyo been bombed, they ask? Why hasn't Mikado been sent to his ancestors via the atomic disintegration route? Does America hesitate to win the war in one stroke? Then send a few atomic bombs to China, and the Chinese Air Force will do the rest. Chinese, who remember the rape of Nanking, refuse to believe the Emperor of Japan is a harmless port. They charge him with the murder of 50 million Chinese people by fire, sword, bomb, and starvation. They like to experiment on the atoms that hold him together. With victory in sight, the perennially patient Chinese are for once chasing at the bit. Throw the bombs on Japan and worry about surrender terms later. That's what they urge here in Chungking. The Chinese government is waiting for the Allied ultimatum to produce results. But in the meantime, they wouldn't mind getting a few atomic bombs by land lease. There'd be less talk of a Chinese civil war if they did. This is Charles Minor, returning you to Mutual in the United States.
And that concludes our transmission.
And the momentous news that Soviet Russia declares war on Japan has not had much chance to spread to the island. But even at this hour, you can detect an intangible something that is different. The Navy men who have heard the news say, wonderful, maybe, just maybe, we'll be home now by Christmas. Suddenly, into the minds of servicemen here, come a glimmer of hope that perhaps, after all, this will not be the long, drawn-out war we had all feared. First the atom bomb, and now this new development. It looks now as if Pacific-based bombers may soon be striking at targets in China and Manchuria, giving a direct assist to Russian ground troops in the same manner as it was accomplished in Europe. General Spots is here in direct command, and he is a disciple of shuttle bombing. So perhaps one day soon, you'll be seeing B-29s taking off from the Marianas dropping their targets on the Japanese Empire, and then landing in Russia. Certainly, this Russian declaration of war will make our bombing of Japan and our patrolling of the Sea of Japan far easier by being able to use Soviet airfields. The prime difficulty to this strategy, of course, is the gasoline, spare engines, bombs, and ground crews, which would have to be shipped north from here to the Manchurian border. And yet the Soviet declaration of war opens up a whole new field of possibilities. To Admiral Nimitz, it may mean that Vladivostok can perhaps now be used as a refueling point for United States ships, submarines in particular. But if not Vladivostok, certainly Russian ports just north of Vladivostok. This would guarantee an ironclad blockade of the Japanese islands, in which not even a rice ship from Japan to Japan could slip through. For no longer would our submarines have to make the long journey to the south for supplies, torpedoes, and fuel. But whether this new development of the Pacific War will mean sudden capitulation by Japan is anyone's guess. No one knows the Japanese mind. Admiral Nimitz says that this is the stumbling block to any orderly conclusions one might draw. No one just knows the Japanese mind. It is unpredictable, and though surely they would now like to quit, they are still capable of fighting on. This is Paul Manning at Advanced Fleet Headquarters on Guam, and I return you now to Mutual in the United States. This is Paul Manning at Advanced Fleet Headquarters on Guam. It's still early morning on Guam, and the momentous news that Soviet Russia declares war on Japan has not had much chance to spread through the island. But even at this hour, you can detect an intangible something that is different. The Navy men who have heard the news say, wonderful, maybe, just maybe, we'll be home now by Christmas. Suddenly, into the minds of servicemen here, come a glimmer of hope that perhaps, after all, this will not be the long, drawn-out war we had all feared. First the atom bomb, and now this new development. It looks now as if Pacific-based bombers may soon be striking at targets in China and Manchuria, giving a direct assist to Russian ground troops in the same manner as it was accomplished in Europe. General Spots is here in direct command, and he is a disciple of shuttle bombing. So perhaps one day soon, you'll be seeing B-29s taking off from the Marianas, dropping their targets on the Japanese Empire, and then landing in Russia. Certainly, this Russian declaration of war will make our bombing of Japan and our patrolling of the Sea of Japan far easier by being able to use Soviet airfields. The prime difficulty to this strategy, of course, is the gasoline, spare engines, bombs, and ground crews, which would have to be shipped north from here to the Manchurian border. And yet the Soviet declaration of war opens up a whole new field of possibilities. To Admiral Nimitz, it may mean that Vladivostok can perhaps now be used as a refueling point for United States ships, submarines in particular. But if not Vladivostok, certainly Russian ports just north of Vladivostok. This would guarantee an ironclad blockade of the Japanese islands, in which not even a rice ship from Japan to Japan could slip through. For no longer would our submarines have to make the long journey to the south for supplies, torpedoes, and fuel. But whether this new development of the Pacific War will mean sudden capitulation by Japan is anyone's guess. No one knows the Japanese mind. Admiral Nimitz says that this is the stumbling block to any orderly conclusions one might draw. No one just knows the Japanese mind. It is unpredictable, and though surely they would now like to quit, they are still capable of fighting on. This is Paul Manning at Advanced Fleet Headquarters on Guam, and I return you now to Mutual in the United States.
This is Jack Mann with Admiral Halsey's Third Fleet off the coast of Japan. This is a happy ship and a happy fleet this morning. There's a bright sun overhead and there's sunshine in the eyes of the men who have been on duty all night. The sensation and news of the atomic bomb, followed so quickly by Russia's declaration of war against Japan, has us all breathless, very happy, and anxious to finish the job. The big news from Washington, however, did not interrupt the Third Fleet schedule. And as I speak to you now, more than 1,000 planes from British and American carriers are winging through the golden morning to renew our air assault on aircraft, airfields, and shipping on northern Honshu. We've been under a security blackout since July 30th. We were safely out of range when the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima the other day, but this morning the dawn came up like thunder over Japan. While we await reports on these strikes, the ships of our fleet are buzzing with the big news from the States. That means only one thing to all the men out here, a quicker trip home. Home by Christmas. That doesn't seem so impossible now, yelled one machinist mate as I passed. I've got a couple of brothers who can get drunk on this for me, but I'll have to wait, cracked the second. On the fantail, another group solemnly wondered whether this news meant a Russian invasion of Manchuria, the leasing of air bases, or just air attack by the Russians. I don't see why we have to invade now, said one boy.
We won't have to, replied his buddy. The Japs have to quit now.
The boys were serious as well as excited. As I talked to them this morning, a destroyer pulled alongside to transfer some personnel. Seamen lined the rail and called out across the ocean to us. No one could hear them. You didn't have to know what they were saying or of what they were thinking. Thoughts of home were written all over their tired, grease-stained faces.
This is Jack Mann with Admiral Halsey's Third Fleet off the coast of Japan. I return you to Mutual in the United States.
1M, Roger. Stand by. We'll check now on the 5-minute spot and see what is desired of that.
This is Jack Mann with Admiral Halsey's Third Fleet off the coast of Japan. This is a happy ship and a happy fleet this morning. There's a bright sun overhead and there's sunshine in the eyes of the men who have been on duty all night. The sensational news of the atomic bomb, followed so quickly by Russia's declaration of war against Japan, has us all breathless, very happy, and anxious to finish the job. The big news from Washington, however, did not interrupt the Third Fleet schedule. And as I speak to you now, more than 1,000 planes from British and American carriers are winging through the golden morning to renew our air assault on battered and bewildered and beaten Japan. We've been under a security blackout since July 30th. We were safely out of range when the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima the other day, but this morning the dawn came up like thunder over Japan. Our carrier planes pounded home an emphatic exclamation point of fire and destruction on the end of our surrender dial ultimatum to the enemy as they tore in after aircraft, airfields, and shipping in a dozen sections of northern Honshu. While we await reports of these strikes, the ships of our fleet are buzzing with the big news from the States. That means only one thing to the men out here, a quicker trip home. News of Russia's declaration of war came at approximately 4:30 a.m., while most of the ship was at battle station. Ensign James L. Fallon of Colorado Springs, Colorado, who reads the news over the ship's circuit nightly, broke the news to the men. He said simply, Armed Forces News Service in San Francisco has just reported Russia has declared war on Japan. The word spread rapidly. Correspondents bravely climbed out of their sacks and made their way to the wardroom, where over coffee, officers were discussing the bulletin. The officers were calm, but in other parts of the ship, the enlisted men made no pretense of the electric excitement that was sweeping the ship. I walked around the deck. All over, in anti-aircraft stations and at waking details, the men were gathered in little groups. They were smiling and chattering to each other. It was shortly after 6 a.m. The sun was very bright, and the weather, as if to celebrate the big news, had changed from the chill, clammy gray of the past few days and was clear and crisp. And by Christmas, that doesn't sound so impossible now, said one machinist mate as I passed. I've got a couple of brothers who can get drunk on this for me, but I'll have to wait, cracked the second.
On the fantail, another group solemnly wondered whether this news meant a Russian invasion of Manchuria, or just the leasing of air bases, or possibly an air attack by the Russians. "I don't see why we have to invade now," said one boy. "We won't have to," replied his buddy. "They have to quit now." The question of how long Japan can hold out was raised 48 hours ago when the news of the atomic bomb reached the ship. I was asked to read the announcement to the men, and when I had completed the broadcast, I came down from the bridge and found large groups of men excitedly discussing the new weapon. Their reaction to that news was equally enthusiastic. "It's a good thing we have it and not the Japs," said one boy, "and it's our responsibility to see that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands." Others speculated on the Japs' reaction to the atomic bomb and whether it would make invasion of the home islands unnecessary. "If we can wipe out all life on Japan in a few days, what the hell are we waiting for?" asked one rugged individual. Another boy took a more serious view. "We just can't use that bomb indiscriminately," he explained. "We have prisoners of war in Japan, and they have to be considered." The boys were serious as well as excited. As I talked to them this morning, a destroyer pulled alongside to transfer some personnel. Seamen, their blue dungarees lashed by a stiff wind and a cold spray, lined the rail and called out across the ocean to it. No one could hear them. You didn't have to know what they were saying or what they were thinking. Thoughts of home were written all over their tired, grease-stained faces. This is Jack Mann with Admiral Halsey's Third Fleet off the coast of Japan. I return you to Mutual in the United States.
Roger.